If we have not met before, my name is John Whitaker, and Tucker is out of town. And so I am going to kick off our summer series today. We wrapped up 1 Timothy a couple weeks ago. Last week, we had the pleasure of hearing from Brent, who was in town from Italy. And we are kicking off a summer series today from Luke chapter 6 called The Way of Jesus. And if any of you have ever been driving around town and seen a sign like this one, I'm assuming you know what to do, right? Like, don't go that way. And now apparently, it is possible to miss a sign like that and end up going the wrong way. True? When my wife and I were just dating, I was a freshman in college. Louise and I just started dating. I was new to Boise. We were going somewhere. I don't even remember where it was, but it was night, dark outside, and we were heading to downtown Boise. And my wife says, oh yeah, turn here, turn here, turn here. So I turn, and as soon as I turned, I realized we made a terrible mistake because there's headlights coming at me. Wrong way, right? And apparently I'm really good at this because then a few years later, now we're married, not dating, we're living in Cincinnati, Ohio, and somewhere again in downtown Cincinnati, and I turn left. But as I turn left, it's one of those streets that's like the boulevard streets that's like three lanes on each side of a divided median with like trees down the middle. I thought the trees were the other side of, you know, the sidewalk. No, I turn left, and now I'm on a three-lane road heading right towards cars coming directly at me. What's your reaction in a moment like that? I know what mine is. My reaction is, oh, no. Like, let's flip a U-ey real quick. Let's get out of here, right? Wrong way. Now, the early Christians were known, when you read the book of Acts, as the Way. Why were they called the Way? Well, they were called the Way because Jesus himself described himself as, one of the more famous verses from Jesus' teaching, I am the Way. I am the Way, the truth, and the life, right? That's what Jesus says. I'm the Way. And as a result of that, the early Christians began living a certain way and were known, therefore, as the Way. Because they were convinced that Jesus taught the right way to live. And that word way, I don't know exactly what you think. When you hear that word, sometimes we think Jesus is the way, and we immediately think of the destination. He's the way somewhere. He's the way to heaven, right? Sometimes we immediately think like that. But that's not quite right. The idea of that word way is more like a roadway or a pathway, if we look at the next picture. And the idea is that you're walking a certain way of life. You're going down a certain path. You encounter Jesus, and now you have a choice to make. Am I going to keep going the way I'm going, or am I going to go a different way? That's the idea of when Jesus says, I'm the way, when the early Christians were called the way, the idea is they had a choice to make about the way, not just the way to somewhere, but how they were going to get there, the path they were going to take. How were they going to live their lives? And that's the idea of this sermon series, The Way of Jesus. It has to do with the pathway, the roadway, the way of life, the way you or I are currently living. What's the way? Are you going the wrong way, or are you living the right way? And those of us who are followers of Jesus are convinced that Jesus himself is the one who teaches the right way, and other ways of doing life are, they're like turning down the wrong way, missing the sign, and everything's starting to get out of control because you're going the wrong way. Jesus' way is the right way. That's the idea. And so this summer, we're going to walk through Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes called the Sermon on the Plain. It's Luke's version of that where he passes on to us the way of Jesus. And the reality is, for you and for me, that Jesus did not come, live, die, rise again simply to make good church members. He didn't do that. That wasn't his end goal. Going to church is nice, but being a good church member is not simply the sum total of the thing Jesus was after. And here's the thing, you could actually be a good church member and not be walking the way of Jesus. It's just a reality. Think about a good church member for a second. What's a good church member like? Well, they show up on Sundays. Well done, right? They show up to church on Sundays. A good church member serves, volunteers in their church. They help with the greeting. They help with the kids. They help with worship, right? They serve. They volunteer. All pastors would tell you, I love church members who volunteer and serve because we have lots of needs. And good church members give, right? They tithe. They give money to the ministries of the church. And having been a pastor for over 30 years, I can tell you just about every pastor would be super grateful to have people who show up regularly, serve regularly, and give regularly. And if you do that, you would be a good church member, but you're not necessarily walking the way of Jesus. You could do all those things and not actually be walking Jesus' way the rest of the week in your overall life. You could be still doing your own thing, going your own way in how you carry out your business, how you handle your finances, how you relate to your spouse and raise your kids and everything else. Jesus comes to offer you and I a way of doing life that is good for us and better for us, the way of Jesus. You see, what Jesus actually bled, suffered, and died for was not to make good church members, but to make good disciples. That's actually the commission he gives to his first followers. Go and make disciples. Now, the question is, what's a disciple? What's a disciple? Oftentimes, in a church service, the preacher's up here, and he does all the talking, and you do all the listening. This is the moment where I'm going to let you talk. What's a disciple? That's the reason I asked the question, and I want you to maybe shout out an answer or two, is because that's sort of one of those church words, those religious words that we don't use most of the other times in our life. We use it in church context. And so sometimes we haven't paused to think about, well, what is actually a disciple? So this is your chance to talk in church. What's a disciple? Shout out an answer. A student, a follower. Anything else we want to throw to the mix? An apprentice. All right. Now, think about follower, student, apprentice. When you think of a student, what picture comes to your mind? Learning, right? And usually in our context, where do you find students? School, in a classroom, right? Sitting in a classroom, they got tables or desks. There's a teacher up front and there's a whiteboard behind, right? And the students have their pens out and their paper out or their laptop out if they're allowed in the classroom. And what are they doing? They're taking notes. Why are they taking notes? Because there's going to be an exam. And they want to pass the exam. Why do they want to pass? I know, because I taught full-time for 19 years. I know how this works. Is that going to be on the test? I got that question all the time. Why do they want to know what's going to be on the test? Why are they writing notes? And why do they want to pass the test? Because they want to pass the class. Why do they want to pass the class? So they can get their degree and they can be done, right? That's the way students work in our cultural context. So while we could translate the word disciple as a student, the picture that comes to our mind is not necessarily the same picture that Jesus had in mind when he used the word. You're sitting in your biology class, freshman biology class in high school or college. How many of you were so enamored with your biology teacher that you wanted to someday just be just exactly like your biology teacher? I can't wait to become like my biology teacher someday. Guessing for most of you, probably not, right? Our idea of a student is somebody who learns the information so they can pass the course, so they can get their degree and be done with school. That's what we think of as a student, right? When we think of a follower or an apprentice, well, that moves us, I think, closer to the idea of the picture that Jesus had in mind when he said, make disciples, live as a disciple. If you're going to walk my way, you're going to be a disciple. What's a disciple? Well, here's the way Jesus puts it in Luke chapter 6, verse 40, which is going to be our kind of main text. Luke 6 is our main text for the summer. In Luke chapter 6, verse 40, he says this. He says, no one or a student is not above the teacher. And the word translated student there is mathetes. It's disciple. It's the same word translated disciple elsewhere in the Gospels. A disciple is not above the teacher, but everyone. Every disciple, when he or she is fully trained, will be, what's the word? Like. Will be like the teacher. So every disciple, when he's fully trained, ends up becoming like the teacher that they've attached themselves to learn from. That's the image, that's the understanding Jesus had in mind of what it meant to be a disciple. It's not just learning what the teacher knew, right? It's not just mastering the information that's passed on so you can pass the test. The goal is to become like the rabbi, like the teacher. That is simply what it meant to be a mathetes, a talmid, a disciple in Jesus's world. So when Jesus says, calls you and I to be disciples or calls us to go and make disciples, that's the image. He's saying, I want you to make people who are learning from me how to become like me. And since Jesus is our teacher, he's our expert, to be a disciple of Jesus means the aim, the objective, the outcome we're pursuing is becoming just like Jesus. And that's why, the word apprentice actually maybe fits a little bit better with the idea of being a disciple than just the word student. Because an apprentice might actually sit in an occasional course, watch some video lectures, but then the apprentice immediately goes and puts it into practice and learns how to do it. And they may not be very good yet, but they know what the objective is. They're going to become like this particular teacher, right? That's the goal. I had a friend who, when he was around 50, you know, early 50s, 50-something years old, decided it was time in his life to pick a new career. He was going to become an electrician at 50-something years old. He wasn't particularly handy with anything in life. I don't know why he thought this would be a good option for him, but that was going to be the choice he made. And so, first week on the job, what's he doing? Is he stringing, wiring, and putting in outlets? Not quite yet. He's early in his apprenticeship, and he really doesn't know anything about outlets or wiring anyhow, because that's just not how he thought. And so his first job, you're going to dig trench, and you're going to bend pipe. So he's 50-something years old with a shovel, digging trench bending pipe, conduit, so they could run the wires through. He did not last very long as an apprentice electrician. His back was hurting, his knees were hurting, it just wasn't working for him 50 plus, and he quickly realized, I have made a bad choice, right? I shouldn't be an apprentice electrician. On the other hand, had another friend who, on this particular occasion, I walk out into my garage and I smell something funny, and our lights were flickering. Like, this is not a good combination. So I text this other friend of mine who I knew had been an apprentice electrician for a while. And I text him and said, hey, Anthony, I smell something funny and my lights are flickering. I think maybe I need someone to check it out. And Anthony is like, as soon as I'm off work, I will come over. Anthony shows up at my house. And he doesn't have his journeyman's license yet. He's still an apprentice. He shows up at my house, but he's been an apprentice for long enough that he actually can do some electrical stuff now. And he quickly diagnosed a unique experience that had happened in my circuit breaker box. The entire bus for the circuit breakers in my box had cracked in half. And it was arcing inside my circuit panel. Anthony was so amazed by this that he actually called his boss, the journeyman he was apprenticing to, and said, I've never seen this, have you? And his boss was like, I've never seen that either. So he had to drive over just to witness the phenomenon of my arcing circuit panel. And then when all was said and done, his boss said to Anthony, "Do you need me to stick around and help you, or do you got this?" And Anthony said, "No, I got this. I got this." Why? Because an apprentice's goal is to become like the journeyman, like his teacher. And so Anthony did a complete changeover in my circuit panel on me as an apprentice electrician, because he had been trained enough that he was becoming like his teacher. And that's the idea of what it means to be a disciple. Every disciple, when he's fully trained, will be like his teacher. And so what does that mean for you and for me as disciples of Jesus? We're not electricians, we're not plumbers, we're not cabinet makers. We're disciples of Jesus who knows the way of life, who knows the proper way for us to live, who knows what leads to human flourishing. So we're going to become disciples of Jesus. Here's what that means. Simple definition of a disciple is a disciple arranges their life to be with Jesus in order to become like Jesus. Both parts of that are important. They arrange their life. They rearrange how they spend their time, how they approach the activities of their day. They rearrange their whole life with the express intent, the express objective of becoming like Jesus, because they're a disciple of his, and that's the goal. They want to become like Jesus, not just like him externally. They don't want to hang, you know, Christmas ornaments on a tree that's going to be dead in 3 weeks and you're going to throw away. They want to become good trees, so they're going to become like Jesus from the inside out. They're going to have his life flowing in them and out of them, and they're going to become like him from the inside out. That's what a disciple is. A disciple is someone who arranges their life to be with Jesus in order to become like Jesus in the character of their life and in the mission of their life. Their life will be like him in their character. They'll love the things Jesus loves. They'll want the thing Jesus wants, so that they'll routinely and naturally and by second nature do the things Jesus would do. And they're going to actually pursue the same sort of aims and objectives Jesus would pursue in his life. Both in their character and in the ambitions of their life, they will be like Jesus. That's what it means to be a disciple. And I hope you can see the difference between being a good church member and being a disciple. You could be a good church member. You could show up on Sundays. You could serve regularly. You could tithe and by most metrics be a good church member. But in the inner character of your inner being, you're not being transformed into Christ-likeness. And sadly, that's why you hear reports of people who were maybe even in leadership in the church. They were known as good volunteers. They were known as good church members. But then all of a sudden it comes out they were living a double life all along. They weren't really becoming like Jesus from the inside. It was all a show on the outside. But that's not who we are. That's not what we're about. We're about learning the way of Jesus, because we're disciples of Jesus. That's what Jesus wants for us, and that's what Jesus calls us into. So this summer, we're going to walk through this passage in Luke chapter 6, exploring, all right, at least what are some of the things, if we are living as a disciple and learning to become like Jesus, what are some of the things we're going to do differently? What are some of the things we're going to believe in differently? What are some of the things we're going to want differently if we're learning the way of Jesus? Handful of years ago, I was preaching on some of these same themes at a different church. I actually put on the screen a little pathway for disciples that kind of marked out a course towards becoming like Jesus. And after service, I was standing out in the lobby at this particular church and visiting with people, you know, and talking with people. And it was clear there was someone who wanted to talk to me, but he wanted to wait till there was less people around and the lobby was, a little more empty. And so it was in between first and second service, and finally the lobby emptied out. And this guy approaches me and he says, hey, John, can I ask you something? I said, yeah, sure. And he's like, well, you know, when you put that, what a disciple is, that someone becoming like Jesus, and you put that path on the screen about how to live like Jesus, to become like Jesus. I said, yeah. He said, well, I've been a Christian for over 10 years. And I think I would put myself clear back at the beginning of that path, like way back in like the new disciple stage. Clear back at the beginning, even after 10 years. And I asked him, well, why is that? This was his answer. His answer was, because no one actually told me where to go and how to get there. Going to church for 10 years, never even knew he was supposed to be pursuing Christ-likeness. I said, well, what did they tell you? And he said, well, they told me I should go to church, I should serve, and I should give. That's exactly what he said. And he said, I've been doing all those things for over a decade, and I haven't really become like Jesus from the inside out yet. We were making good church members, not good disciples. But Jesus' aim for you and for me is not just for you to be a good church member. His aim is for you to become a good disciple who loves like Jesus loves and lives like Jesus lives and does the kinds of things that Jesus wants you to do. And that's where passages like Luke chapter 6 come into play. They help us understand what it looks like to be and to live as a good disciple of Jesus. And so what I want to do is I want to read you just a handful of verses that make up Luke's account of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. It may be the same sermon, just boiled down a little bit more from Matthew 5, 6, and 7. It may be that Jesus preached it on a different occasion, because as a traveling preacher, you might preach the same sort of content in slightly different ways at different times, right? I just want to read it to you so you can hear it and listen to it. And then this summer, what we're going to do here as a church is we're going to walk through this chunk of scripture, kind of line by line, verse by verse, and think about what does it look like to live as good disciples learning the way of Jesus. So listen to what Jesus teaches us in Luke chapter 6. He raised his eyes towards his disciples. That's us, right? He raised his eyes towards his disciples and began saying, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry right now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you or insult you or scorn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man." That's Jesus himself. "Rejoice on that day. Jump for joy. For behold, your reward is great in heaven. For their fathers used to treat the prophets the same way. But woe to you who are rich, for you're receiving your comfort in full. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all the people speak well of you, because their fathers used to treat the false prophets that way. And I say to you who hear, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who speak abusively about you. Whoever hits you on one cheek, offer him the other. And whoever takes away your cloak, don't withhold your tunic from him either. Give to everyone who asks from you. And whoever takes away what's yours, don't demand it back. Treat people the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good things for you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive back, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend without expecting anything in return, and your reward will be great with your Father in heaven. And you will be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to the ungrateful and evil people. So be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Don't judge, and you won't be judged. Don't condemn, you won't be condemned. Pardon, forgive, and you will be pardoned. Give, it'll be given to you. They in fact will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return. Jesus also spoke a parable to them. A person who is blind cannot guide another person who is blind, can he? Won't they both fall into a pit? The obvious answer of that is, yes, indeed. They won't know where they're going since they're both blind. Then he says the line that we focused on today. A student is not above the teacher, But everyone, when he's fully trained, will be like his teacher. So why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye, but don't notice the log that's in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take that speck that's out of your eye, when you don't even see the log that's in your own eye? Hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, then you'll see clearly to take the speck that is in your brother's eye. For there's no good tree that bears bad fruit. And on the other hand, there's no bad tree that actually bears good fruit. Each tree is known by its own fruit. For people don't gather figs from thorns, nor do they pick grapes from a briar bush. The good person, out of the good treasure of his heart, the good character, the Christ-like character in his heart, the good person, out of the good character or the good treasure of his heart, brings forth what is good. And the evil person, out of the evil treasure, brings forth what is evil. For the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. And why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, acts on them, I will show you what he's like. He's like a person building a house who dug deep, laid the foundation on a rock, and when there was a flood, the river burst against that house, and yet it couldn't shake it. Why? Because it had been well built. But the person who hears these words of mine, listens to sermons and teachings and Bible studies, but doesn't put them into practice, doesn't act on them, is like a person who built his house simply on the ground without a foundation. The river burst against that house, and that house immediately collapsed, and the ruin of that house was great. That's the way of Jesus in Luke chapter 6. That's the passage we're going to explore in detail, step by step, this summer as we walk through it together as a church family. The reality is this. Here's the point of all of that. If you are living as a disciple of Jesus, that means you're seeking to learn the way of Jesus. If you're living as a disciple of Jesus, you're going to be putting into practice the things that Jesus taught, the things that Jesus did. You're learning the way of Jesus. Why? Because every disciple, when he's fully trained, will be like his teacher. That's what it means to live as a disciple. So if you've been living as a good church member, but not actually becoming like Jesus from the inside out, that's the challenge. That's the invitation. That's the call from Jesus. He has a way of life. A way of life that's not the wrong way. It's the right way. It's good for you. And it'll help you become the kind of human being you were made to be. If you're like just curious about Jesus and you're here today like, I'm not even sure I believe in Jesus yet and I'm not even sure what I think about church and all of that, I just want you to know that what Jesus is offering you is a way of life. And I believe it's a good, wise, healthy, right kind of way. And if you've been living as a disciple of Jesus, don't stop. Don't stop when you're discouraged and you're tired and you still find within yourself things that are less than Christ-like. Keep living attached to Jesus. Arrange your life to be with him. Attach yourself to him. And Jesus will not only teach you his way, he'll give you the grace and the strength and the power of his own spirit to help you live that kind of way. See, this isn't like pull yourselves up by your own moral bootstraps. It's not like just try harder to be like Jesus. No, the reality is Jesus came, lived, taught, and then laid down his life, rose again, ascended to the right hand of the Father, poured out the Spirit so that he could help you live this kind of life. That's why you have to arrange your life to be with him, because it's by his strength, it's by his presence, it's by his grace that we actually become like him. We don't just try harder on our own. Jesus has come to us in the person of the Spirit. And he gives us the strength and the grace day by day to actually be changed from the inside out. And so we rearrange our life to live in deep connection with him, deep partnership with him. And in doing so, by his Spirit, now walking with us, we are changed bit by bit, little by little, until the things we love, the things we want, the things we value actually look a whole lot more like Jesus. So that someday we look back on who we used to be and who we are now, and we realize, by the grace of God, I have learned a new way of life. That's what it means to live as a disciple of Jesus.